and welcome to Irreverent Testimony, brought to you by Netroots Radio, the political podcast by and for millennial and Gen Xer types from a left-wing perspective. It is Saturday, June 24th, 2017, and we are talking to you from lovely Black Hawk, Colorado.
Yes, we are. We're in bed and in a cabin in the middle of nowhere. And we're on vacation right now, and we're podcasting for you guys. Just for you.
Because there's just way too much crap going on to skip
yes.
an episode.
Yes. So you're welcome.
You're very welcome. And here we are.
We've been stalling a little bit today because it's been so peaceful up here and just lovely and no TV. And
yeah.
Yeah. But we're back in the game. We're going to talk to you about all the goddamn ridiculous nonsense that's been going on.
Well, let's get right to it, right? Unless he wanted to talk about something else in particular. I mean, we got to go right to the healthcare bill.
Yeah. I mean, there's a million things, but let's start with that.
So the details of it were finally released on, what was it, Tuesday, Wednesday, Monday, sometime this week.
I think it was later than that. I think it was Wednesday or Thursday. But this bill has been crafted behind closed doors with just really a handful of Republican senators. This is different from the House bill that passed. So this is the Senate version.
Uh-huh. In some ways worse.
Yeah. Everyone keeps calling it meaner.
In some ways, yes.
It is. Yeah. It's horrifying and terrifying and scary and cruel and...
And a very blatant just tax cut for rich people.
Yes.
Under the guise of a healthcare bill.
Right. There's no healthcare in it.
Yeah, and there's no... Republicans aren't really denying that part. They just don't have a very good answer for why are you calling this a healthcare bill when it's a tax cut bill? And it said something, something, the economy. And that's really the best they can come up with. So it is, to make a long story short, it's a clusterfuck. Nobody likes it. Nobody wants it.
16% of Americans think it's a good idea. 1/6.
Mm-hmm.
The kind of the details of it are cuts Medicaid drastically, which was one of the real benefits of Obamacare. A shitload of people got to have Medicaid under the expansion. That's mm-hmm. being rolled back. It cuts funding, or actually it doesn't cut funding. It just allows insurance companies to not cover basic essential healthcare things, which is something that Obamacare did that, again, we didn't talk about enough, but Obamacare built this floor and it said, if you're going to make people pay for health insurance, there are certain things that you're required to cover.
Yeah. You must cover.
You must cover stuff like maternity care, mental health care, addiction,
substance abuse,
prescription drugs, emergency room visits, doctor visits, basic, it's healthcare. So basic things that are, you would need to have for your health need to be covered, and
explicitly does away with
it.
That.
Does it? It does.
Now
away.
That's not to say that your insurance may not decide to cover those things, but plenty of insurance won't.
Well, and the problem with it is the way that the Republicans are framing it. I was listening to the garbage person Ted Cruz talk about this. He's against it, quote, because it's
not. He's going to vote for it.
Yeah, of course. Well, we're going to get to that in a minute. But the way that they're explaining this taking away the floor is. Under the guise of, and it's really insidious, under the guise of insurance premiums are too expensive. And the reason that they're too expensive is because we're requiring people to have things they may not need.
Right.
And so we would like to have the option, give insurers and consumers the option to buy garbage medical plans that don't do anything because they can't afford plans that cover things they might need. Now... Mm-hmm.
That's the Cruz, Rand Paul thing. Yeah.
Allow insurers to offer what they call, quote, catastrophic health insurance and not cover things like maternity care and mental health care right. and addiction treatment.
And just on that thread for a second, they also want to do away with lifetime caps. So your catastrophic care may not really even help.
Well, they're putting in lifetime caps, right? So you're only allowed to spend so much.
They're putting back lifetime caps, right. which was pre-Obamacare.
So let's say in the middle of, you're in your 50s and you get diagnosed with breast cancer and
you need a few
six
rounds of
months
chemo.
Into your chemo, you hit your cap.
You're done.
You're done with chemo or you pay for it out of pocket.
Which you can't afford. Unless you're a millionaire.
So you better not live past 50.
Or if you do, you'd be fortunate enough to not get cancer, which 1/3 of Americans are going something to develop like of some kind.
And our technology and healthcare is so great that a lot of people survive cancer precisely because they have the healthcare that they need. Mm-hmm. So that's a huge part of it. And that's their line of thinking. The problem, of course, with that is, first of all, it's taking advantage of the most vulnerable people. If you can't afford healthcare, so first they're taking away Medicaid for the most poor people, people that can't afford. What Obamacare did was said, we're going to give Medicaid, which is the health insurance, government health insurance for poor people. We're going to expand it to a higher income bracket than it was before.
Right.
To this sort of in-between population of, I'm not homeless, but I don't make enough to have private health insurance and my employer doesn't provide it.
Right, which is a lot of people.
It was
You'd
like,
be surprised
yeah,
how many people.
Like millions of people, right?
Tens of millions of people.
So they're going to get rid of that.
I have been in that slot several times in my life.
Yes, absolutely. So have I.
Yeah. And we are professionals with advanced degrees, or at least bachelor's degrees, that have been working our whole adult lives.
My whole life, since I was a kid.
This is very normal.
Yes.
This is not weird.
No. Health insurance is expensive. And one of the things Obamacare said was, we recognize that even if you make $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 a year, but you've got two kids and, you know, you're a single parent, you're likely not going to be able to afford a couple thousand dollars a month for yourself and your children.
And this bill also waives the mandates of certain size companies to even offer insurance. I mean, there's
Correct.
So many
there's
horrible
so many
things
horrible
in this
things.
Bill. It's like, we don't know where to start.
Right.
So we're throwing all this
all
stuff
this
at
you. Because it's just overwhelming how awful and cruel and terrible it is.
But we're going to cover as much of it as we have uncovered.
Yeah. As much as I can possibly explain.
Yeah.
It really does a number on older Americans. And the thing that's getting kind of lost in the media about this is everybody goes, well, older Americans have Medicare. Okay, that's true. But we're talking about, again, we're talking about these gaps, these sort of gray areas. You know, Obamacare fixed it for lower income, but not poverty level.
Medicare only kicks in at 65.
So older Americans means Americans between the ages of 64 and about 45.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're 45, I think it is, to 64, they literally, I'm not making this up, wrote a provision into this bill that said insurance companies can now charge you
five times
more than someone who's not in that age range,
again,
someone who's younger.
Let me back up and say none of this is hyperbole.
No. We're this is just making, what's in the actual
this is,
bill.
This is what the language is in the bill.
Correct.
You could debate the effects of that, but what is in the bill, we are telling you verbatim.
Right. I'm not making anything up or anything.
No.
This is just what they wrote down.
Yes.
For their, quote, healthcare law. So, for your folks out there who voted for Trump, for your folks out there who didn't vote for Trump, for anybody out there who's between the ages of 45, I think it is, and that, don't quote me on that, but I think it's 45 and 64, they can now be charged five times more for healthcare, for their premiums, for what they pay, than you are, if you're my age, right? And of course, that makes sense for insurance companies because people, as you get older, you develop more health needs, right? You develop more illnesses and just things. Your body starts to break down and they don't want to cover you. And so this is a bill that's written for insurance companies, period. I mean, we sort of accused Obamacare of that because we didn't get single payer. This bill is literally just like a blowjob to insurance companies.
Yeah, this is we always talk about Republicans have lobbyists write their bills. This is insurance lobbyists writing the bill.
Yeah. So, getting back to the catastrophic care for a minute, the thing that is so frustrating for me is that, first of all, it takes away a mandate too. You don't have to get health insurance.
Mm-hmm.
You're no longer required to have health insurance, which will crash the health insurance market yet again. But this catastrophic care, this idea that it's pre-Obamacare, it's the idea that, you know, my little brother, he's 6 years younger than I am, and he did not have health insurance for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
He's a skier, he's a snowboarder, he's a really active guy, and it used
to... So like most younger guys, I mean, they're active and they do risky things.
Right.
And they're not going to stop if they don't have insurance.
No, and he's also a chef. And so that's a kind of dangerous business as well. Luckily, So I used to really, like, I would sort of stay up at night worrying about when he'd go on ski trips, like, what if something happens to him?
Yeah.
What if he breaks his leg?
Yeah.
He doesn't have, he didn't have health insurance. He couldn't afford it. He was not an executive chef at the time. He was a sous chef and a line chef before that. And he just couldn't afford health insurance. So he just didn't have it. And he had this sort of philosophy of like, well, I probably don't need it. And, you know, I'm Superman and I'm invincible.
And they have to treat me. And then, you know, I'll
right.
just
and then I'll just
pay
it off over 50 years ago, bankrupt. And, but really he was like, probably nothing will happen.
Right. Which is what you think when you're young and naive.
Exactly. Exactly. And so then if, even if he was like, well, I could buy this catastrophic thing if I'm going to go skiing. The problem with that is like, you don't know what's going to happen in life. That's yeah. the point of insurance, is that you don't know what you're going to need.
Yes.
And giving people the option of buying something like things, catastrophic care,
a la carte insurance,
a la carte insurance.
You know, you're going to get hypertension. You know, you're going to break your leg. You know,
you're going to suddenly have bone cancer,
you're
going to be flying along and something happens and your eyeball falls out. Like things happen in life. And catastrophic health insurance does not cover a lot of the things that happen to people that they don't see coming.
Yes.
And it's folly to put this out as an option and say, well, this is what people want. No, it's not what people want. It's done out of desperation. People who buy these plans do it out of desperation. At least I have something. I can't afford anything else.
Mm-hmm.
And Obamacare did away with that. It said there's a floor. If you're going to be a health insurance provider,
you have to provide
these things.
Yes.
And taking that away is dangerous and cruel and feeds on the...
Well, it's going to send a lot of people into bankruptcy.
Again, we're going to go back to this.
And a lot of people are
going to die. Yep. We're going to go back to this system where a lot of people are going to die because of lack of access to healthcare, and a lot of people are going to experience extreme suffering and bankruptcy
and by
financial
the way,
ruin.
That sucks for the economy.
Yep. When people have to spend all of their money on something that insurance should cover, guess what they don't spend their money on?
I mean, it's good for the insurance industry.
Exactly.
Or at least the tops at the insurance
industry.
That's
exactly right. That's what I said. This bill is a blowjob to the insurance companies.
But the rest of the economy,
no.
It's disastrous.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, this bill itself, if it goes into action, might enact a new recession.
Mm-hmm. It's like it was before.
That bad.
And people are pissed. I mean, people are scared. People are angry. The day that the bill was finally uncovered from its dark, secret, smoke-filled room full of like 13 Republicans.
13 white Republican men.
Right. No women were in the room,
add. And I don't think, I guess you could say Cruz is a man of color, kind of.
Yeah.
Was he even one of them? Yeah, I think Cruz was.
I don't know, actually, but
a bunch of dudes.
Just let's talk for a minute about the fact that there were no women in the room and what the bill does for women's health care.
Oh, boy.
It defunds Planned Parenthood in part.
For a year, which is weird that they would just do it for a year, and they think that that'll
bring
Murkowski and Collins on board if it's only for a year.
I don't know. It takes away the mandate that employers, that birth control is free.
Oh, yeah, well.
It does not require insurance to cover fucking maternity care. Can I just, okay. We want to get rid of abortions.
The unborn.
We want to get rid of abortions, right? We're going to defund Planned Parenthood because they're an abortion factory, according to Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
Great. So what we should do is make sure that when women are pregnant, they don't get any health care because the baby, like, what the fuck? What is that? Babies are babies from the time that the sperm hits the vagina or something, and that's life, and we all give a shit about that. And then in our healthcare bill, we say we don't have to cover maternity care.
And
we don't actually have to care for the child inside the carrier woman person womb factory thing. It doesn't matter. Just make sure it exits her vagina alive or dead or whatever. It doesn't matter. But you don't have to care for the baby, care for the mother, care for the fetus. Just make sure it doesn't get aborted.
Yes, not to mention all the slashing of Zika funding. And we all know what Zika does to the unborn. So what this is proving, interestingly, getting lost in all this, is that Republicans actually don't care about the unborn.
They don't care about women. They don't care about babies. They don't care about children.
What they care about is hundreds of thousands, control of their bodies.
That's right. Period. Many hundreds of thousands of children will lose health insurance because of the Medicaid cuts. Many hundreds of thousands of children will be born without proper prenatal care.
Many will die in the womb.
Many will die in the womb. Many women will die in the process. They don't give a shit. They care about ladies shouldn't be sluts. Just keep your goddamn legs together. Unless your husband says he wants sex, and then it doesn't matter because you have to do it. It's just controlling women's bodies. That's all it is. It has nothing to do with fucking babies. If it had anything to do with babies, they would be increasing the amount of maternal care that's necessary, particularly considering what Molly and I talked about a couple weeks ago, which was that the United States has the highest rate of maternal death during birth of any civilized country on the planet.
Yep.
So, okay. Fuck you, women. It is seriously
fuck you babies, fuck you babies, unborn. Fuck you kids.
It feels like it's so scary. It feels like a seriously like it's just an attack on the American people. On
it is now. Before we get into the politics of it,
yeah,
there's much more that this bill does that we haven't even touched on.
Okay, go. I mean, it's everything. It's everything that...
Well, let's talk about what they're doing with block grants and high-risk pools.
Oh, my God. Please. Yeah. It's kind of complicated. Do you want to explain it?
Okay. Well, the way Medicaid works now is that it's federally funded, and basically however many people qualify, the federal government is going to subsidize it.
Right.
And the state is going to run it.
Right. The government provides states funds to run. Yeah.
Now they're going to give you a set amount no matter what the needs are and who's covered. So that just means that obviously means less money in the pool. And you're talking about a place like Colorado where the population is expanding exponentially.
It's exploding.
Because it's a beautiful climate and the economy's good and you know,
job market's great.
We're not as affected by climate change as other places. Yet. But legalized pot. I mean, a million and one reasons. People are like me are streaming into Colorado.
Yes. And I'm not one of those crazy nativists. We have this whole population of people in Colorado. Yeah, they're like, I hate the transplants and they're the worst. Fuck you. Like, fuck off.
Yeah.
My state's amazing. I get it. You're welcome here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But with more people means more health needs and mental health needs and substance abuse needs.
That's right.
What have you. And they expanded Medicaid here and it's gone really well.
Very well.
And we've had some issues with the exchange system.
But in Colorado, ours was one of the more successful ones in the country.
I used it.
I can
tell
did.
You firsthand. Yeah. I got me a very nice silver plan with Kaiser for $144 a month. And there was not a crazy deductible. And there were some things I wasn't crazy about. But overall, it was pretty good insurance for $144 a month.
That's right.
It was pretty good.
That's right.
And I was very
and
happy.
You were going through a period of unemployment. And you needed that because you did not have employer health care.
Yes. And I couldn't afford Cobra for $1,000 a month.
Right. And without the ACA and without the state exchange, you would not have had health insurance.
I would have not have had health insurance.
Correct.
Period.
Right. You would not have been able to afford anything else.
No.
Right.
Because I didn't quite qualify for Medicaid.
Right. Again, those gaps.
Yes.
Right?
And then later I did for like it wasn't even a month. It was a couple weeks. I had like a gap where I couldn't even do that.
Yeah.
And I needed Medicaid.
Right.
And I was able to get on it.
Right. Because of the expansion.
No, I didn't really need to use it for anything, I don't think, but...
But again, you don't know what's going to happen.
You don't know, yeah.
And we didn't know it was only going to be 2 weeks.
No.
We had no idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. So...
So I didn't have
I feel
to
like
go...
We're all over the world on this, but it's just so, like, emotional and overwhelming bill is.
When
that,
I
like,
see this tweet today by a quote-unquote liberal or somebody who's moderate saying, well, we can agree that this is terrible policy and that Obamacare was terrible policy. And I'm like, no. Obamacare was not terrible policy. Was it flawed in many aspects? Yes.
But it was, as he said, a first step.
Yes.
It was, as he said, incomplete. It was, as he said, a first step that will help millions of Americans and we should continue to improve on it.
Which it did.
It did.
Now, a lot of the inherent problems in Obamacare were caused by Republicans. The Republicans went to the Supreme Court and won the right to reject Medicaid expansion.
That's right.
So the red state governors Mm-hmm. Like in Texas and Kansas and Oklahoma, rejected
Indiana,
Medicaid expansion.
Oklahoma, Kansas, a bunch of them.
Mm-hmm. Just for no other reason than F you, Obama.
Right.
It's going to screw our state economy and we're not going to be able to afford to care for people. But
and a whole bunch of the citizens of my state that would benefit from this, I'm just deciding that they're not going to get to.
Yeah.
Which is crazy that any of these people are still in office.
Yeah.
And that's our fault also for not messaging it better. But
partially. Partially.
Yeah. So,
and then there were some other things too. I won't get too deep into the weeds, but a lot of the problems with Obamacare are problems uniquely created by Republicans, either by their insistence on ways to craft the bill that everybody could approve it, of it, mm-hmm. or that they wouldn't filibuster it. Because remember, it got, they're doing this with 50 votes. Obamacare got 60 votes in the Senate.
It also took almost a year and a half.
With open hearings.
With open hearings. Do you remember that round table?
Mm-hmm.
Where all the dudes and ladies were sitting around and they had the media in there and they were going to do this
round
table
talk? Nobody else
remembers
because the media keeps parroting these Republican talking points of, well
Obamacare
was in the dark.
Well, Obamacare got pushed through too. No, no.
It took a fucking year.
It took over a year.
This has been a week?
Yeah.
2 weeks?
Yeah. Yeah. And nobody has seen it since 2 days ago. I mean.
And they're going to vote on it in four days.
4 or 5 days. Yeah. Next week.
So.
Don't
give me this shit.
No, it's bullshit.
And why does nobody remember? Like,
and there were unlimited amendments allowed on Obamacare. There were, I can't even, countless Senate hearings. Countless. There won't even be a single Senate hearing on this bill.
Not one.
Is almost unheard of for any bill ever. at ever. You just don't not have a fucking hearing of the whole Senate so people can talk and discuss. They're just like, nope, you read it, you vote on it, we're not going to talk about it.
Yeah.
It's craziness.
And they're going to try to pass it through reconciliation.
Again, like, this is not normal. I just want to really make that clear. Do not let the media's weird bullshit.
Both sides crap.
Both sides. It's not true. Obama was inaugurated and it took his first thing that he wanted to do was healthcare. He used all of his political capital on Obamacare.
All of it. And this is while the economy was still tanking.
Still tanking. And he knew, though, that this would be good for the economy.
And in the long run.
Was. And he spent a year. There were just, I mean, the public discussion about this. Think about how long we talked about death panels.
Months
and
months.
How many Senate hearings we
months.
Had about death panels. That's because we had public hearings and we allowed idiots to talk, which I think we should still continue to do. And there were so many different debates that we had over Obamacare. It literally took a year. And Republicans were absolutely in on the crafting and writing of that bill. A lot of the parts of the bill came out of the 90s Republicans
mm-hmm.
who were trying to fight Hillary Care. A lot of the ideas that are in Obamacare came from Republicans from the 90s in Hillary
Care, right?
Let's give
a specific example, right? Because Hillary Care was much more along the lines of single payer.
Yes.
It wasn't completely single payer.
No, but
it was along those lines. Way more. Mm-hmm. And Republicans said, well, you know, the reason this isn't going to work because healthy people have to buy into this.
That's right.
We need an individual mandate.
The fucking mandate was their idea.
Was their idea. And
they said, instead of having government health care, why don't we just make it so everyone, because they wanted to keep it privatized.
Yes.
They said, instead of having government health care, what if we just make everyone buy private health care, but we make them do it, that way the risk pool is larger.
Exactly. And it made sense.
And now.
The Democrats said, that's not exactly what we had in mind, but I guess that works. And if you guys are on board.
We'll do that.
We'll do that. And that's what happened.
And then the,
and then the
one
Republicans
thing,
turned around and said,
this
we got them on this.
This is socialized medicine.
Well, it wasn't even socialized medicine. That this is un-American to force people to buy something.
Yeah.
And that was their main constitutional argument.
Yes.
It failed, but it's still sort of their battle cry. And you know, here's the funny thing I just found out today. That the new bill was going to wipe it away, and now they're trying to add it back in.
Because it doesn't work without it.
So are Rand Paul or Ted Cruz going to be okay with that?
No.
No, but they will.
They will, and we're going to get into the politics in a minute. But before we do that...
I mean, they won't be okay with it, but they'll vote for it.
Right. Well, hold on. So, before, because I have a whole thing to read about the politics of how this is going to go down, and it's terrifying. Okay, so the other thing I wanted you to touch on was the high-risk pools.
Yes,
and
okay.
How that works. Because that was originally brought up in the House bill.
Right.
And it was by this Republican guy whose name I can't remember, and I apologize.
Well, Paul Ryan's big on high-risk pools.
But he, it was like sort of this concession that he was allowed, that he sort of worked behind the scenes, and he's got this sick daughter, and we talked about it in a previous podcast. But anyway, bringing up the high risk pools again in the Senate bill. Is that right?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
So briefly.
So this is the idea behind a high risk pool, where Obamacare says you cannot deny anybody insurance, like the real affordable insurance everybody gets based on pre-existing conditions. Republicans are trying to say, no, that just drives up premiums and fucks it up. So, you know, we'll cover those people, but we'll do it with this pool, with what we call a high risk pool, where those really bad, hard to insure, sick people, they'll be in their own separate bucket that we'll insure them in. Now, the only way that would work is with massive funding of it.
Yes.
Without enough funding of it, it's worthless.
Yes.
And there will not, the way it's written, there will not be anywhere close to enough funding. I think they said for high risk pools to work, there has to be something along the lines of at least $200 billion.
Yeah.
And what they want to fund it with is like $2 to $8 billion.
It's like $9 billion.
$9 billion, yeah.
So, you know.
So you're short.
Not covering it at all.
So you're short by 90%, 95% of what you need.
Mm-hmm.
So that's it. It's not any more complicated than that. Seriously, guys. It's like saying, well, this your 94 Corolla with bad wheels, like that sucks to insure. I mean, we can put you into this high risk category where you'll be covered for, you know, up to like $500.
Like
if I get an accident, a really bad accident, somebody's car gets totaled, that's going to be like $15,000. Like, oh well, that's what's in the pool.
We'll give you $500.
$500.
Can you buy a car for $500?
No.
Can you fix your car for $500? No. Can you?
And by the way, your insurance premiums are like $200 a month.
Yeah.
So it's but like, if you, why do I have insurance?
Why do I have it? Or
well, you legally have to have it. Oh, well, that's another thing with cars too. Everybody has to have car insurance to drive a car.
Mm-hmm.
Guess now they're saying you don't have to have health insurance to have a body.
Yeah, I love the argument when I make this argument about car insurance, and they say, "Well, you don't have to drive."
Okay.
Cool.
You don't have to breathe, Rachel.
You don't have to be alive, all right?
You don't have to have a corporeal body.
You don't have to be alive.
Let's just transfer your brainwaves to a computer until insurance is affordable, okay?
Until you can afford to live. It's fine. Don't worry about it. It'll be fine. No, it's just really bad. It's really bad, and it's really... it's bad. Okay, so I want to read a couple of things.
Hold on. It's more than bad, right? It's... If you don't like to pay attention to this stuff, or you have a brother or a coworker or a friend or a parent who doesn't like to pay attention to this stuff and says, oh, I'm so sick of the hyperbole. It's not really that bad. Tell them to read what's in there.
Yep.
Because it actually really is.
Yeah. The full text of the bill is available. Look, just read it.
Here's the honest truth. We don't hate Republicans for the sake of hating Republicans. And
nope.
We don't hate Republican ideas and bills they offer for the sake of hating Republican ideas and bills. What happens is they offer something up. We look at it and we realize what it means. And we say, generally, this sucks. And I've been trying to rack my brain for some... Back in the day, the Republicans voted with Democrats and along for some very good stuff. Like once Mike Huckabee actually voted for... contraception being available, believe it or not.
Wow.
But that's the thing, guys. We would love to have read this bill and go, you know what? It's not that bad. Okay. You know what?
Yep.
It's not great, but you know what? We can live with this. But no, this is not the case.
Nope.
Because we're not pessimistic people and we don't want to be terrified.
No.
We want to be okay. We want to be able to exhale and say, okay, we'll get past this. You know, we don't... We're not these just political beings that go, ooh, this is really bad. And if Republicans pass it, we can take back the House in 2018. No.
People are actually going to die.
Survive.
That's right. And, you know, I said something the other day on Twitter to somebody who was saying, like, you know, bitching about Democrats being bad at politics. And I said, yep, we are bad at politics, but we're good at governing and we're good at helping people, even if they didn't vote for us. And we don't actually care if they voted for us or not. We still help.
Yeah.
Because ultimately, okay, we lose on messaging and we're kind of in a toxic mess right now with a whole bunch of stuff we're going to get to. But really, we're not trying to kill people to give rich people more money. It's not a value that we have as a party.
No.
And we're not trying to hide the killing of people to give rich people more money under some cloak of something else. We were just sort of against that.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, even if you want to believe that, even though it's been proven again and again that it's a myth and it doesn't work, if you actually believe that trickle-down economics is a thing that works and the invisible hand solves all the problems, because let's back up, right? Like, our friend Raul Tano would probably look at this bill and say, oh, but you guys don't get it. Once they get rid of these caps and the essential health benefits, of course insurance is going to cover that because they want to compete.
No.
We already know
that's not true, because pre-Obamacare, nobody did that.
No.
Pre-existing conditions were not covered.
And this is not a luxury item. This is not like, well, Tesla and Ferrari can just build shitty cars and you'll just buy them. It's like, no. This is your life.
This is your literal healthcare life.
They have us by the balls.
That's right.
And they know it.
That's right. So if we do not make the government make them do the right thing, they're not going to.
They won't.
That's why almost every other country on earth that has the resources to do so has government health insurance.
Yes, because they've understood that healthcare is not a commodity.
That's right. Healthcare is not a commodity. It's not a thing that you can allow the free market to control, because the free market is only concerned about money.
Not without major
government regulation and oversight.
Yes.
But most countries even then said, you know what? Fuck it. It's too much work. Let's just make it not a commodity. Let's just take the free market out of it. These are people's fucking lives.
Single payer, guaranteed healthcare for everybody.
Yes, everybody's going to have to pay more taxes. Yes. Period. You're just going to have to pay more.
People pay higher taxes.
Everybody's going to pay more.
And hospitals and doctors make way, way less.
Yep.
And
but they also have, generally speaking, a much better experience at their job, because they do not have to fill out all this bullshit paperwork.
Yeah.
And this insurance company doesn't cover this, but that one does. And this paperwork wasn't filled out right. And this person has this.
Patients aren't on the phone for hours and hours and hours of fighting with their own insurance companies to get the coverage that they paid for.
Right. So, yes everybody pays higher taxes.
There are a few
problems. But you also don't pay for an insurance premium.
No.
And you don't pay copays.
No.
You don't have a deductible.
No.
You don't have any of it.
No.
You just pay higher taxes. And literally every person in your country has health insurance.
And
at
overall
the exact
healthcare
same
costs are so much lower because there's so much more preventative care.
Yes. And there's
and
so
healthy
much
care.
Like, even if we bitch about the Republican idea that government healthcare is bad, it's always this idea, well, when you get into the bureaucracy of things and you get government involved, there's all this bureaucracy and all this red tape. The truth of it is, if you look at the administrative costs percentage-wise of Medicaid and Medicare, which are government healthcare programs, they are significantly less than the administrative costs of private healthcare.
Blue Cross, Blue Shield, Aetna, United, you name it.
Kaiser, all of it. It's far, far less.
Oh, Kaiser, I think it's here in town. Kaiser has how many huge buildings just filled with administrative offices?
Yeah.
Tons.
Yeah.
And Kaiser's pretty good.
I had Kaiser for a while. They were pretty great, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But just the overhead. I mean, seriously, drive around suburban Denver and count the number of huge 10-story, 3-city block administrative buildings.
For Kaiser.
And tell me that bureaucracy, the problem with, government healthcare is bureaucracy.
Right.
Yeah.
No.
Or Aetna. There's two huge Aetna buildings in downtown.
Yeah. I see one of them. Yeah, exactly.
And
from your apartment.
It's all administrative offices.
You can't go. Aetna doesn't provide healthcare. It's not like there are doctors there.
No,
at least
you can't
at Kaiser, you go into a Kaiser building and there's doctors. At Aetna,
well, yeah. Kaiser has its own dedicated administrative buildings too. But
they do. But yeah. Aetna, yeah. You can't go to Aetna to see a doctor. That's just a building.
For administration.
For people to administrate the insurance policy. It's crazy.
Yeah.
So it's bullshit. Don't believe the lies. It's not true.
Nope.
Okay. There was another point that... Okay. So going back to your point about we don't just want to hate Republican bills, I'm going to read you the statement that Barack Obama released about this healthcare bill.
Okay.
Because I think it brings up a couple of really great points. And also, he hasn't said much about much, but here's what he said. Our politics are divided. They have been for a long time. And while I know that division makes it difficult to listen to Americans with whom we disagree, that's what we need to do today. I recognize that repealing and replacing the Affordable Care Act has become a core tenet of the Republican Party. Still, I hope that our senators, many of whom I know well, step back and measure what's really at stake and consider that the rationale for the action on healthcare or any other issue must be something more than simply undoing something that Democrats did. Read that I did, right?
Mm-hmm.
We didn't fight for the Affordable Care Act for more than a year in the public square for any personal or political gain. We fought for it because we knew it would save lives, prevent financial misery, and ultimately set this country we love on a better, healthier course. Nor did we fight for it alone. Thousands upon thousands of Americans, including Republicans, threw themselves into that collective effort, not for political reasons, but for intensely personal ones. A sick child, a parent lost to cancer, the memory of medical bills that threatened to derail their dreams. And you made a difference. For the first time, more than 90% of Americans know the security of health insurance. Healthcare costs, while still rising, have been rising at the slowest pace in 50 years. Women can't be charged more for their insurance. Young adults can stay on their parents' plan till they turn 26. Contraceptive care and preventative care are now free. Paying more or being denied insurance altogether due to a pre-existing condition, we made that a thing of the past. We did these things together, so many of you made that change possible. At the same time, I was careful to say, again and again, that while the Affordable Care Act represented a significant step forward for America, it was not perfect, nor could it be the end of our efforts. And that if Republicans could put together a plan that is demonstrably better than the improvements we made to our healthcare system that covers as many people at less cost, I would gladly and publicly and fully support it. That remains true. So, I still hope that there are enough Republicans in Congress who remember that public service is not about sport or notching a political win, that there's a reason we all chose to serve in the first place, and that hopefully it's to make people's lives better, not worse. But right now, after 8 years, the legislation rushed through the House and the Senate without public hearings or debate would do the opposite. It would raise costs, reduce coverage, roll back protections, and ruin Medicaid as we know it. That's not my opinion, but rather the conclusion of all objective analyses from the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office, which found that 23 million Americans would lose insurance, to America's doctors, nurses, and hospitals on the front lines of our healthcare system. The Senate bill unveiled today is not a healthcare bill. It's a massive transfer of wealth from middle class and poor families to the richest people in America. It hands enormous tax cuts to the rich and to the drug and insurance industries, paid for by cutting healthcare for everybody else. Those with private insurance will experience higher premiums and higher deductibles with lower tax credits to help working families cover the costs, even as their plans might no longer cover pregnancy, mental health care, or expensive prescriptions. Discrimination based on pre-existing conditions could become the norm again. Millions of families will lose coverage entirely. Simply put, if there's a chance you might get sick, get old, or start a family, this bill will do you harm. And small tweaks over the course of the next couple of weeks, under the guise of making these bills easier to stomach, cannot change the fundamental meanness at the core of this legislation. I hope our senators ask themselves, what will happen to the Americans grappling with opioid addiction who suddenly lose their coverage? What will happen to pregnant mothers, children with disabilities, poor adults, and seniors who need long-term care once they can no longer count on Medicaid? What will happen if you have a medical emergency when insurance companies are once again allowed to exclude the benefits you need, send you unlimited bills, or set unaffordable deductibles? What impossible choices will working parents be forced to make if their child's cancer treatment costs them more than their life savings? To put the American people through that pain, while giving billionaires and corporations a massive tax cut in return, that's tough to fathom. But it is what is at stake right now. So it remains my fervent hope that we step back and try to deliver on what the American people need. That might take some time and compromise between Democrats and Republicans, but I believe that's what people want to see. I believe it would demonstrate the kind of leadership that appeals to Americans across party lines. And I believe that it's possible if you're willing to make a difference again, if you're willing to call your members of Congress, if you're willing to visit their offices, if you're willing to speak out, let them and the country know in very real terms what this means for you and your family. After all, this debate has been about something bigger than politics. It's about the character of our country, who we are and who we aspire to be. And that's always worth fighting for. So.
Guy knows how to string together a few sentences, huh?
Yeah. What a refresher.
Yeah.
But, you know, to that point, even he said, I've said all along, if you can come up with another plan that is better, that covers more people with better coverage at lower cost, fuck Obamacare.
Sure.
This was a first step.
He also knows it's a rhetorical statement that Republicans are not going to,
of course not,
craft a plan that covers more people and costs less.
No, unless they want to do single payer.
Well, okay, that's the thing, right? Now we're all hearing like, yeah, this is really bad and it'll pass and it paves the way for single payer.
Okay, okay, well, good. Susan Sarandon.
Well, right. That assumes without a doubt we are going to take back the Congress in 2018 and we're going to win the presidency in 2020. And are we still taking these things for granted? Like the fight is here and now.
I cannot and will not tolerate yet again this idea that we should let something really fucking terrible happen so that people will see and then something better will come out of it. Because yeah. What happens is people die.
Yes.
People go to jail. Like this whole fucking, oh, well, we need Trump to bring the revolution. What is happening right now? People are being deported. Families are being ripped apart. Our health insurance is about to be taken away. It didn't bring, no. In, maybe it will. I don't know. In the meantime, people are being hurt.
Yeah. And it's very easy for Susan Sarandon, who is getting close to, I think, Medicare age anyway.
Yep.
And certainly has a large enough, probably, financial reserves to be okay, mm-hmm. to say, well, we'll accept those losses. We will accept that collateral damage of
great.
All these people dying uh-huh. and getting sick and going bankrupt because the new wonderful, glorious phoenix of super ultra liberalism will rise from the ashes. And it was better than settling for a pseudo liberal like Hillary Clinton. And
we shouldn't fight this bill because it's so bad that it'll allow us to take back 2018 and then we can have single payer. Fuck you. I don't know that. And in the meantime, how many people are going to die on the backs of you want to do something? No, no. We fight this here and now, and we do not allow some idealistic pie in the sky. Let's hope this is what happens. And if not, I'm not fucked. So it's fine to take place. We protect those that are the most marginalized and the most vulnerable among us with every breath that we have every day. And we don't say, well, just hang on and sorry if your kid dies, but we're trying to take back the house. Fuck you.
Yeah.
Not sorry if your kid. No, no, I will not let them do this. I will do everything in my power to not let them do this. And everyone else should too.
And we don't have time.
No.
We have this weekend and a
yes.
couple days.
That's right.
And there's going to be a vote likely, unless McConnell knows he doesn't have the votes. But we're talking about probably a vote Wednesday or Thursday this coming week.
And we won't even have had the bill be public for a week by that point.
We may we'll have a CBO score, but the CBO score won't reflect any recent amendments, which, by the way, if it's Lee and Cruz and Rand Paul stamping their feet about changes, it could get worse.
Yes.
People assume like, okay, well, Heller and Murkowski will whine and then that'll make it a little better. It's like, don't assume that any amendments that they're going to tag onto this thing are going to make it better.
Rand Paul called it Obamacare light, which means he wants it to go further.
Yes.
Worse.
Yes.
Ted Cruz too.
Yeah.
So this
others.
Is not, oh, we're there are some Republican senators that are like, oh, well.
Heller
you
came
know.
Out pretty definitively against it.
He and, did. And I.
And Murkowski and. But
right.
I'm not convinced Heller couldn't be swayed back if they throw in something sweet for Nevada. It's going to be hard
well,
for him to walk that back.
That's the next thing that I'm going to talk about.
Yeah,
is,
we have a couple minutes till the break. I don't know if you want to get into it now or.
Yeah, because we have so many things to get to after the break. So basically, I was reading this article in the Washington Post about why you should not get excited about any Republicans that are saying that they aren't going to vote
for
this fucking bill.
Yeah, everybody's hyperventilating every time a Republican says, oh, I don't know about this bill. It's bullshit.
There's this really interesting article. It's on the Daily 202, which is kind of like their little, here's some things that happened that aren't like super in detail.
Mm-hmm.
But here is the statement of Senators Rand Paul, Ron Johnson, and Mike Lee of Utah. Now, I want you to just take note of all of the things in this that let them weasel out of this later.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
Currently, for a variety of reasons, we are not ready to vote for this bill, but we are open to negotiation and obtaining more information before it is brought to the floor. There are provisions in this draft that represent an improvement to our current healthcare system, but it does not appear that this draft, as written, will accomplish the most important promise we made to Americans, to repeal Obamacare and lower their healthcare costs. Okay, there's 17 things in that that let them go, well, I said it didn't appear to, but then I looked closer, and it is better, but not quite. And if you do one thing, then...
Yeah.
So it makes it look like they're resisting a little bit, but ultimately...
Like they care.
Ultimately... They're all going to vote for it.
Johnson's going to vote for it for sure. Who are the other two? Cruz? Cruz is not going to vote against an Obamacare repeal bill.
No, he can't. Rand Paul may not vote for it because he doesn't care.
No, he will.
And Mike Lee of Utah?
Oh, he'll vote for it. Those are all yeses.
Yeah, I agree. They're all people that are saying right now they're not going to, but they all are eventually going to.
Yeah, the only ones who even might be on the fence are Heller, Murkowski, Collins, Portman, maybe, maybe one or two others, and we would need three of them. And I'm not convinced we have it.
I'm not either.
I McConnell is giving out two free passes. And here's the other thing. It can't be three. It has to be at least four or five. There is not one Republican senator who is bold enough to be the deciding ship sinker.
That's right.
No fucking chance.
No, it has to be four or five people. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And currently, our guy, Cory Gardner, isn't saying shit.
Well, of course, he never says shit.
Nope. He's not even addressing the fact that he's about to vote on something that affects everyone in the country. And he
will
just
very
not.
Quietly vote yes.
Yes.
And release some kind of statement about how
he's
great it is.
He's talking about Russia. Right now, he would like to talk about how he proposed to have sanctions on Russia. Can we talk about Russia? I don't want to talk about healthcare. I want to talk about Russia. Can we do that? Russia? Russia. Russia.
Are we going to talk about Russia at all? Because kinds of shit happened about Russia this week.
Sure, but like, this is why we started the show today with this, is this is the most vital, most important, and most time-sensitive thing that's happening.
Absolutely.
This Russia shit is going to go on. It's not going anywhere.
Yeah.
We can talk about it. Mueller's doing his thing. We can talk about it. This is right now. This is imminent.
Yes.
This is happening. This is going to happen.
Behind all this, there was some quite unbelievable, amazing things that were revealed about the depth to which Russia actually really did hack our election and our voting systems.
We're going to talk all about that in the second half, and it's important, and don't lose sight of it.
Yeah.
But right now, your action item is you call your senator, particularly if you live in a state where you have a Republican senator, and you call them and you tell them in no uncertain terms with personal stories and promises and threats and whatever you need to tell them, please do not vote for this. Do not do this to my family.
Mm-hmm.
Do not do this to my sister. Do not do this to my mom. Don't do this to my neighbor. Don't do this to my cousin. Don't do this to me.
And we'll talk about a little bit why that could fall on deaf ears, because they're just terrified of being primaried by the right.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back, and we'll talk some more about all this stuff. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Reverend Testimony. We talked in depth about the Health Care Act, that it's working its way. It's not working its way. I don't know.
It's in the Senate right now.
The fucking thing's going to come up for a vote sometime this week. It'll probably pass, and then I don't know what happens.
Me either.
So other shit happened in the world.
It did. A lot of shit happened in the world. I'm an avid reader of the Washington Post, as you all might have noticed.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think about the podcast all week and sort of what I try to keep track of stuff that happens day by day to sort of don't forget to talk about this, don't forget to talk about that. Inevitably, we could do this for 4 hours and I won't get to everything.
No.
But So on Friday, I was kind of going through and trying to make a list. And before we get into the Trump-Russia thing, because I have, I don't even know how many stories about revelations that came out this week, I wanted to talk about something a little bit local, but certainly with a national thing, which is Mike Pence, Vice President Pence,
mm-hmm.
noted, what is it, Christian, conservative, Republican, in that order?
He's a Catholic.
Catholic.
Devout Catholic.
Catholic.
Very, very conservative.
Conservative. His line, though, right? Catholic, conservative, Republican, in that order, something like that?
Some bullshit like that, yeah.
Well, there's an organization called Focus on the Family.
Yes, in Colorado Springs.
It is a right-wing, evangelical, political organization that has done some serious damage to the things that I care the most about in the world.
It's basically now an anti-gay hate group. That's really anti-gay, all they
anti-woman,
care about.
Anti-woman.
Yeah.
Yeah. Super anti-woman, anti-gay hate group. And it just so happens to be located in Colorado Springs, Colorado.
This is just an hour south of us.
It is, on I-25. And
seems like a different universe, though, doesn't it?
It does. It's so weird to be an hour away from... And it's not just Focus on the Family. Colorado Springs, in general, they call it the evangelical capital of the country.
Mm-hmm.
Remember the guy with the meth and the gay hooker?
Yes.
I can't remember his name, but...
I can't remember. Now it's escaping me, too.
Tony Perkins. No.
No.
That's the Tony other guy. Perkins. Anyway... You guys know who I'm talking about.
Yeah.
His mega church was in Colorado Springs.
Yeah.
There's a lot of evangelical mega churches in Colorado Springs. So Focus on the Family is a national organization, but their home base is in Colorado Springs. They are celebrating their 40th anniversary.
Yay.
And Mike Pence decided... Oh,
they're the same age as me, baby.
Oh, that's gross.
What a dubious distinction.
At least it's not on the same day.
No.
They celebrated their 40th anniversary...
With a gay orgy.
I wish. Yesterday.
Okay.
And Mike Pence decided to come to Colorado to give a little speech to them. Now, I very nearly took the day off
this
work.
Would be the kind of thing that would be sort of controversial. No, I guess not.
No.
If Cheney did that, no one would blink.
Nobody would care.
Yeah.
Nobody would care. It's a very... They fund a lot of... They get a lot of donations because they are so
super crazy,
virulently anti-gay and anti-woman and anti-choice.
I mean, I think it's either the ACLU or the Southern Poverty Law Center has labeled them a hate group.
That is correct.
This is not, you know, us doing it.
Just no. They literally are. So anyway, I almost took the day off work and we almost changed our plans for this weekend to
That's
go down
right,
there and protest.
They're down there right now, right?
It was yesterday. Friday, and we thought initially it was a Saturday. So we were like, oh, fuck it. We'll just go to the springs and protest and then we'll go to the mountains. But
right.
It was a day of work and there was all kinds of stuff going on at
and
work.
And we couldn't find, it was because of that probably, there were like no hotels in the area.
Yes, none. Yeah. No Airbnbs, nothing.
Nothing. Yeah.
Nothing. We couldn't find anything. And just for a lot of work reasons, we just couldn't get out of there. But so anyway, my daddy Pence was in Colorado Springs and he had some things to say that are just as awful as you would think that they are. I guess Trump's awful, right?
Yeah, I think we can agree on that.
I think that he's probably working actively to destroy the Republic.
Or accidentally, either way.
But at the same time, we have to remember who this man is, Mike Pence.
Yes.
We have to remember that he isn't like, you know, the silver-haired fox that's going to be just fine and save everything.
Yeah, milquetoast politician
no,
guy.
No, he's not.
He's super crazy right-wing.
Right. Part of the reason I think that he never ran for president is that he could never win
as
a primary.
Yeah.
And certainly not the candidacy. He's very, he's just so extremely right wing. We've, I think, talked on the podcast before about how he's not allowed to have a meal with a woman without his,
not
wife,
his wife
present.
Yeah.
Because, you know, women, those vixens, they'll get you or something.
Sirens.
So he went to Focus on the Family and he said some garbage things that I have some things to say about.
Okay.
The first one is, now he's the vice president, so of course, he has to talk about the president, right? Mm-hmm. The president will continue to stand without apology for persecuted people of faith. As we speak, we are taking the fight to terrorists on our terms, on their soil, and we will not resist and will not relent until we drive this cancer from the face of the earth.
Now, I'm glad you brought that up, because this week we learned that they're doing the exact opposite, mm-hmm. that there are Iraqi Christians who ICE is getting set to deport.
Yeah.
And so far, the White House is not stepping in.
Hasn't said shit about it, as far as I know.
Now, they do have... They have committed. Now, of course, the way ICE works.
So these are brown Christian refugees. What do we do?
Hold on. The way Homeland Security works is their quote unquote crime could be overstaying a visa or not filling out a form. We don't know.
Correct.
But the ACLU and I think Amnesty International and some other groups have stepped in and said, you're sending these people back into like the ISIS hot zone where they are going to be targets.
They will absolutely be targets of assassination, potentially like public and torture and all the things because they are of the same ethnic background. Right. So, they are persecuted Christians.
In one sense, Mike Pence is right. And the right wingers.
But what are they doing about that?
Well, I'm going to get to that. But the point is that the right wingers get really, really up in arms that either Obama or when it was Obama or when it was the Hillary Clinton State Department did not do enough to protect persecuted Christians in Muslim nations.
Right. Right. Or just around the world generally.
Or just around the world generally.
Particularly. Well.
So now we have a bunch that have made it here.
Uh-huh.
And nobody is talking about the fact that to this point, neither state nor the White House has stepped in to protect these people from being deported.
Back to where they will almost certainly be murdered.
So
we talk a good game about persecuted Christians, or is it just white Christians we're talking about?
We talk a game about persecuted Christians unless they're on our soil.
And... I want to be really clear here. He's not just talking about Christians that come from Muslim countries being persecuted.
No,
he's talking
just means,
about
yeah, in general, like,
Sarah Palin style war on Christmas.
Yes,
Bill O'Reilly persecuted Christians.
I read you
I have
my
to
mock,
bake you a fucking cake, therefore I'm being persecuted.
Exactly. I read you my mock Sarah Palin book critique, and it's that. But
yeah,
serious.
Sarah Palin put out like a Christmas book and Travis wrote an Amazon review about it. And we were talking about it earlier and it made me laugh a lot. But there is this sense of, and he's talking to these evangelical Christian, like very much extremists. And so while he's making a global message about the brown Christians, what he's really doing is dog whistling to them and saying, I know you feel persecuted because Starbucks has a cup that just has snowflakes on it and there's not Jesus emblazoned on the side and that is a war on Christmas.
They didn't turn the siren into Jesus, into a bleeding Jesus.
They didn't. It just was red.
Yeah.
And that's very upsetting.
Yeah.
And they didn't say Merry Christmas to me. They said Happy Holidays. And
that makes me feel persecuted for being a Christian.
That makes me feel persecuted for being a Christian in this country.
Which makes absolutely no sense,
and
of course.
And someone
but.
Had to... There's someone's in court for because they couldn't bake a cake. They refused to bake a cake for gay people. And... That is taking away their religious freedom. We're being persecuted daily.
Persecuted.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Lol. All right. Then he said, American taxpayers should never have to support or fund abortions.
Okay.
They fucking don't. Currently.
Yeah, there's a thing.
Currently, they don't.
There's a thing called the Hyde Amendment.
That's correct. I think that, first of all, if I'm just going to go out on a limb here, American taxpayers should absolutely have to support and fund abortions because it's healthcare.
Yes.
So I'm going to disagree with him on that. But I know that's pretty far lefty for some people. So I'm just going to say that factually, American taxpayers currently don't fund abortions.
But they do fund Cialis and Viagra.
Correct.
And yes. I will go back to this argument that came up during the great contraception wars of like during the Sandra Fluke era, I guess it was around 2012 when the great Sean Hannity, this was brought up and he said, if you can't stand what you call federal funding of abortions or contraception, which doesn't really happen, why should it fund Viagra and Cialis? And he said, well, that's different because that's a medical condition. As if your reproductive health is not a medical condition. It's voodoo magic witchcraft.
Being pregnant is not a medical condition.
No.
That's not a thing. No.
Or not wanting to get pregnant.
Not wanting to get pregnant.
Or if you need it for, like, say, what you have, endometriosis.
Mm-hmm. That's not a medical condition. It's not a medical condition. That's a lady part magic thing.
That's lady part black magic.
That's lady part stuff. That's not a medical thing. That's something else. We shouldn't be funding that.
He literally said this on national TV.
Oh my God. That's amazing. That's amazing. Okay. So then he said, I will not rest and not repent until we repeal and replace Obamacare and give our nation first world-class health care. And I said, I will not rest and will not relent until we are literally living in The Handmaid's Tale. Because
that's yes.
Yes.
That's what that he's gunning for.
Correct.
Absolutely.
Yes. This one I loved. Freedom of religious expression should not stop at the front doors of our churches or synagogues. To which I say, freedom of religious expression should not stop until I can electrocute you and rip the IUD out of your body.
Pretty much.
This is this man.
Oh, yeah.
This is all what he wants.
Yep.
This is not...
Smooth-talking, folksy Indiana guy who's there's still a pretty good chance he'll be the president within the next, you know, year or so. So
yeah.
Get ready.
Get ready.
And if Anthony Kennedy retires and it's now a 6-4 or 5-3 Supreme Court, oh, baby.
I mean, Kennedy is... interestingly referred to as a conservative justice because he was appointed by Reagan,
well,
I believe.
Well, some of his decisions were very conservative.
Well, yeah. No, I mean, I have my problems with Kennedy.
Yeah.
He is very pro-law enforcement. But he also was on the right side of Obergefell v. Right?
Obergefell.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he has protected choice multiple mm-hmm. times. He has protected equal pay. Like, the guy...
It's a mixed bag.
He's a swing voter. That's what we call it. Like he's the swing vote on the Supreme Court. After Sandra Day O'Connor left, he was sort of the swing vote. And I don't always know what he's going to do, but when it comes to civil rights, he's pretty decent.
Yeah.
And I think that probably greatly disappointed. I think it was Reagan, wasn't it, who appointed him? I'd have to look it up, but I'm pretty sure. Whatever Republican appointed him.
Yeah, it was Reagan.
Yeah, but...
during Reagan's last year.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Oh.
Which we shouldn't have let him because we should have let the American voters
decide. People
decide
because it was an election year and we don't appoint, yeah. We don't confirm.
We don't even have a vote.
No, we don't do anything. We just wait for the American people to decide. Anyway, if he, yeah, that's awful. Anyway, Daddy Pence was in Colorado Springs. We did not make it to the protest because it was a work day. But he said some pretty garbage things, which makes sense, considering. All right. You want to get to the Trump shit?
Which Trump shit?
I guess I
kind of almost don't want to, but
I know.
Kind of have to, right?
I think that's kind of our
job,
isn't
it? Well, Trump has been tweeting again. And lost in all the healthcare kerfuffle is the fact that he has said some things that could very well incriminate himself.
Yeah.
And he is... sort of finally admitted to Russian interference in the election, just only under the guise of blaming Obama for it.
Well, he said it's a Dem hoax.
No, but I'm talking about the most recent tweets.
Oh, I don't know. Like today?
Yeah.
Oh.
Or yesterday.
No.
Yeah.
No,
he basically said like, well, now it... because there were stories that why didn't Obama do more or the Obama
That's
administration
That's the first thing
knew,
I kind of wanted to talk about was this article, this kind of bombshell article that came out.
And so Trump just jumped on it and said, well, with all this Russian interference, why didn't Obama do more? And it's like, well, now you're admitting to Russian interference. That's interesting.
Right. I do want to talk
you're
about
not,
this.
You're not, because he's just all over the place and he has no coherent thoughts. And stop trying to parse out that there's
right.
any rhyme or reason or policy behind his
right.
incoherent ramblings.
Of course. But I do want to talk about the Obama bombshell kind of that came out.
I think there's a very simple explanation, but go ahead and get
all right.
into it.
So the Washington Post, I'm sorry, but it's, honestly, you guys, like, my older brother called
me. Subscribe to the Washington Post.
They called
not
me.
The New York
he
Times.
He called me. No. He called me the other day, my older brother, and we were trying to make dinner plans, and he said, you know, I'm really having a hard time with all this news and all this is it fake news, is it not fake news, and he's like, I feel like I know what fake news is, but also I feel like when I turn on the TV, you know, it's just everyone's opinion and I just don't know what to do or where to go. And he just asked me, he's like,
and he said, read the Washington Post.
Yes.
Okay, good call.
Yeah.
And you could also say this, if they're talking about a report that has been confirmed and presented by the intelligence agencies
mm-hmm.
versus an op-ed by Sean Hannity.
Right.
this is very easy.
Well, I said the one thing I think that you'll appreciate about the post is that they say if it's a headline and it, then that's, it's a news story. Then there's things that says analysis, mm-hmm. and then there's things that say, and it, before the headline, it says analysis and then or op-ed. And those are different things. But if you don't even want to go into that, just read the things that don't have anything before them. And that's just things that they have been able to confirm as a journalistic organization.
Exactly. Exactly.
Anyway, I'm going to read just a couple of first paragraphs of this and then we're going to skim through the rest. But this was an odd thing to read very early morning on Friday. It says, early last August, an envelope with extraordinary handling restrictions arrived at the White House. Sent by courier from the CIA, it carried, quote, eyes only instructions that its contents be shown to just four people, President Barack Obama and three senior aides. Inside was an intelligence bombshell, a report drawn from sourcing deep inside the Russian government that detailed Russian President Vladimir Putin's direct involvement in a cyber campaign to disrupt and discredit the U.S. presidential race. But it went further. The intelligence captured Putin's specific instructions on the operation's audacious objectives.
Audacious
objectives. Defeat or at least damage the Democratic nominee, Hillary Clinton, and help her elect her opponent, Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, the outlines of the Russian assault on the U.S. election were increasingly apparent. Hackers with ties to Russian intelligence services had been rummaging through Democratic Party computer networks, as well as some Republican systems, for more than a year. In July, the FBI opened an investigation of contacts between Russian officials and Trump associates. And on July 22nd, nearly 20,000 emails stolen from the DNC were dumped online by WikiLeaks. So that's the bombshell that we sort of just found out,
mm-hmm.
which says that Obama knew. And the article goes on to talk about the steps that he tried to take and some of the things that are currently under. There was this like system that he, this sort of cyber hacking system that he initiated that allowed what they called like bombs inside mm-hmm. of the Russian network, that if it got worse, they could do that. He did a lot of stuff on the back end. And
they did a lot of prep work that he left with the Trump administration,
right.
and said, this is what we did. This is what you can utilize.
That's right. And this has led to a lot of things. People are mad at Obama. And I understand that because I understand where that comes from.
Okay. Let me know when you're ready for me to jump in because I have many opines.
Yes, so do I. So let me just give you my general sure. opinion about this and then you can tell me what you think and we can talk because you and I have not discussed this prior to this moment.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm reading a lot of things on Twitter and a lot of people are, these are liberals that love Obama, are very upset with him and very angry and why didn't you tell us and, you know, why didn't you do more? And I get that. I want you to go back to October of 2016
mm-hmm.
and I want you to think about what everyone felt like. And looking at SNL and Kate McKinnon as Hillary Clinton popping bottles of champagne, no one internalized the possibility that Hillary Clinton was going to lose that election. And I think that the Obama administration made a politically calculated decision to not
appear as though
they were putting a thumb on the scale
exactly.
and be partisan, and that they decided not to leak this information but do things behind the scenes because they did not want to appear to be exactly putting a thumb on the scale on the election. Assuming as literally everyone, including President Trump, assumed that she would win.
Of course.
And maybe that was folly and maybe that was stupid. And I think we all can look back.
Well, in retrospect.
Obviously. But I do not think that
couldn't have gone worse.
I just don't think that he or his administration, Obama's, didn't say anything because of any reason other than they did not want to appear to be affecting the election.
It's like the Nancy Pelosi effect, right? Let's say that he had gone public with this.
Yeah.
And the Republican Congress and the right-wing talking shows and the super PACs went absolutely apeshit.
Yes.
And said, the president is trying to interfere in this election.
Yes.
How dare you? And you know, the same result happens, and we could turn around and say this was stupid for you to get involved. She was on her way to a win, and this appearance
and you
of
just
impropriety
helped
her,
him
just,
raise $100 million or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, it's not to say that presidents don't affect elections. Presidents go campaign for candidates from their party.
Well, this unless you're George W. Bush in 2008.
Right. Well, if they're popular. This is not that accusation. This would have been an accusation that the president was using
the powers of the
sensitive,
office to
exactly, intelligence, influence. Not just his persona, but actual like sensitive intelligence documents to say that something improprietous was going on. That would be
that a Russian force was in cahoots with the opponent from the other party.
Right.
And
no one believed
even
her
when
proof. She said it. No one would have believed him, and it would have become an explosive bombshell of, you know.
Well, this is where we get into House of Cards territory, right?
Yes.
Let me use that as an example.
Sure.
We love House of Cards.
We do.
This season, kind of lukewarm on so far, but it's interesting. But here's the thing. A lot of people that are big politicos hate House of Cards. Like Jeb Lund hates it, and other people really hate it. And they hate it because they say it gets goofy and it just over-dramatizes and it brings all the shit that would never happen in real life.
Uh-huh.
Only this is a very House of Cards plot, isn't it?
Yeah.
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 And the only difference is that a Frank Underwood would run with it.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yes.
Whether that evidence was real or not.
Absolutely.
And
if he could even make a case for it, it wouldn't even have to be much evidence or make the evidence up or I don't know.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah. But see, life imitates art and gets weirder in weird ways because this actually did happen. And now we can be cynical about it and say, well, let's say that Hillary was down in the polls 3 to 5 points.
Right. That it wasn't Donald Trump and it was someone else. And
well, even if
it
was
be,
Trump,
but,
it doesn't matter.
Right,
the fact of the matter is, I'm sure Obama felt and was advised, maybe even by the Clinton campaign. And
probably
we don't know this.
They were in. They probably talked about. Look, she was talking about Russian interference, and everyone said you're
scoffed,
being hysterical.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Then she had evidence. She knew, and she was trying to. And no one would run with it because it seemed crazy.
Right, but whether she can say it, but whether she says they may have had that conversation and says, "Look, do you want us to go like full on public with everything we know?" And the fact that they are trying to influence the election to defeat you, and they may have said, no, that could really hurt us. That could backfire badly.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. Please don't do that. We're in good shape.
And there was also the risk
that no one wants to take up this story.
There was also the thought that if the Russians had that much ability to interfere and inject and have that much access, they could do God knows what else. They could do, they could actually blow up the election and, you know, blow up, you know, have voting machines not work on voting day and people kicked off the rolls and really make it bad.
Right.
Like they just didn't know.
Right.
Now, are we saying that Obama made the right or wrong call? No, we're just saying this is the thought process that went into it.
And put yourself back in October or just September when he found out. There was no indication that Hillary Clinton was going to lose this election. None. So there was no reason to make this big alarming announcement about maybe Russians because it just sounds like you're being a crazy conspiracy theorist.
Yeah.
I'm going to read you just a series of tweets really quick and then I want to talk about it because this woman disagrees with us, but I think she makes some really good points.
Okay.
To be honest, I'm so angry at Obama and his administration right now that I don't know what to write. I have no desire to harm his legacy, but arg.
Arc.
This part I loved. The same confidence and conflict-avoidant nature that contributed to Obama's electability as our first black president hurt us badly here.
Is it a white lady?
It is.
Okay.
I agree with
okay.
that.
Okay.
I agree.
Yes,
he was
but,
confident.
But think about
Clinton,
where she's coming from.
Think he was confident.
We've talked about this, right?
Hold on.
Okay.
Let me just finish and we'll talk.
Okay.
He was confident Clinton would win. All of us were.
Yes.
We didn't have the information he had. When McConnell obstructed his efforts, Obama did not go public personally to inform Americans out of fear of being seen as partisan. In short, O admin weighted political considerations relatively heavily and didn't see the threat for what we know it is now, existential. I pray Mueller is investigating McConnell and any and all ties to Russia, and I don't know what this whole thing with McConnell is about, why she's jumping on him, but it's not my point. Anyway, I love Obama, donated to his campaigns, voted for him twice. It's diminishing It is diminishing of Obama when he is treated as above criticism. He gets to be former POTUS, black and human too. We're all imperfect. Unlike Trump, Obama and his name can handle honest evaluation. Critique does not change the fact that he was a great man and great president.
Yeah, that's fine. My only problem with her is the way she categorizes and says the cool, under pressure, no drama Obama that got him elected also makes him shitty in this regard. And it's like, do you know why he had to be Mr. Cool,
right,
collected?
Exactly.
No drama Obama.
Conflict avoidance.
Whereas
calm.
Donald Trump, mm-hmm, could be bombastic and George W. Bush can be on a,
yeah,
flight deck wearing a flight suit with a giant,
right,
codpiece and a,
right,
mission accomplished banner.
Right. That's what she's saying. It allowed that nature, the way that he publicly presented, is one of the only reasons that we elected a black man.
Yes.
Because he did not.
Yes.
Get angry,
not the
and
angry
fiery
black man,
and, right, exactly.
That would frankly fucking scare people.
Yes.
Are all those
very
suburban,
so,
housewives
who voted for him
and then turned around, mm-hmm, and voted for Trump?
Yes.
You think they would have voted,
no,
for
the
drama Obama?
No. Exactly. That's her point, is that sort of conflict avoidant nature also makes, but so I agree with her that is what allowed him to be the first black president.
Yes.
And I agree that we all thought she was going to win. And I get the politics behind him not releasing it. And in retrospect, obviously, we all made a lot of bad choices.
Okay. Yeah.
But.
Many millions of Americans made a really bad choice on Election Day, okay?
Yeah.
Can I move on to the abject stupidity of the Nancy Pelosi revolution?
Yes, I know.
Which,
yeah,
only really exists with Republican strategists going on MSNBC and trying to whip liberals into a frenzy. Like,
yes,
we need their advice.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So John Ossoff lost the special election.
Yes.
That was just this last week too. was it just this last week?
It was on.
Which we both predicted.
We did.
We
told
said he's
you
got a chance
a couple weeks ago. Or last week, even if he loses by less than 15 to 20 points, that's a really good sign for us, especially
well,
in places
10,
like Colorado,
which
he lost by
4.8.
Yeah.
And there's been a lot of overreaction in some circles to that, which we predicted as well.
Yes.
That the Republicans would crow and say, haha, look, there's nothing wrong with Trump. There's,
yep,
nothing wrong with the Republican brand.
We still have.
Forgetting the fact that there's, mm-hmm, been 10, 15, 20 point swings in these special elections that are supposed to be completely safe,
that
which is the only reason
ever.
You ever have a special election unless somebody dies or goes to jail.
Yes.
When you appoint a sitting congressman to a cabinet post and have to have a special election, you only fucking do that when it is a very, very safe seat.
Yes.
So the fact that those Montana special elections and these Georgia special elections were even close is newsworthy if you understand politics.
Yes.
Pundits pretend not to, so there's a story.
Right.
And this story that they know is going to get a lot of clicks is, see, there's no Trump backlash after all.
Yeah.
Which is...
All Americans actually really love him and
whatever.
We're going to be fucked in 2018.
Whatever.
It's a good story for a day.
Whatever. Mm-hmm. Which is fine, but... I mean, it's not fine. It's fucking stupid.
It's ridiculous.
But to get even more stupid... The name in the last few days before the election, the name Nancy Pelosi came up a lot.
Yes.
Because Karen Handel, which happens in elections everywhere.
All over the place.
Where it's like John Ossoff is just handpicked by Nancy Pelosi.
Yep.
And he's just another Nancy Pelosi liberal and Nancy Pelosi this and that. Because she's an effective boogeyman. She's been a Democrat,
mm-hmm,
in the House forever.
She's from California,
she's
for
California.
God's sake. Oh, my God.
She's born in the side of conservatives.
She's a woman who was the House Majority Leader.
Yeah.
God damn it.
She's a perfect boogeyman.
Yeah.
But
she's shrill.
To get really fucking stupid, and I'm going to explain the ways. So if you're one of our listeners out there that's like, maybe it's time to move on from Pelosi,
her.
I'm going to tell you how fucking stupid you are.
Are you ready for that? Okay. You're going to be all right. I love
you.
No,
you're not. After I do this to you, you're not going to be okay.
But just listen, because
it's
true.
You're going to have to go to the proctologist and get your new asshole looked at.
Because your head just got pulled out of it.
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay. Yes, it is true. The Republicans ran a lot of Ossoff is a handpicked Pelosi, whatever, Pelosi this, Pelosi that.
Yes.
So... If you are to assume that was the determining factor in us losing the election, I'm going to tell you why that is absolutely effing ridiculous. A, why is Nancy Pelosi the only potential boogeyman, or I guess to be more accurate, boogeywoman, because it's usually a woman who...
Yeah.
Why wouldn't it be Elizabeth Warren?
Right.
She's so, a great boogeywoman.
If we get rid of Nancy, hold on. Right?
Yeah, let's pretend we can go back in time and go back in our time machine butterfly effect and make Nancy Pelosi have never existed.
Yeah.
Then the Republicans run on, he's just an Elizabeth Warren type Democrat, and mm-hmm. Elizabeth Warren handpicked him.
Right.
Is that less effective? How about Dianne Feinstein?
Right.
He's just she's Jewish and from California and a liberal who's been in Congress forever. Dianne Feinstein. Is that any less effective? Or how about Chuck Schumer?
Right.
He's not a woman, granted, so maybe not as effective. He's just a throw out Hillary Clinton.
Yeah.
He's just another Hillary Clinton liking Hillary Clinton.
He's just another shill for Hillary Clinton that's just going to take all your rights away.
So are you going to assume any of that would be less effective because the name Nancy Pelosi just has an extra pump and vigor to get Republicans fired up? Do you actually believe that?
No.
Or how about this? Did you actually pay attention to the final days of that election like we did? You mm-hmm. know what else was making the rounds in robocalls and ads and super PACs? A bunch of Islamophobia crap.
Yep.
That there was tying John Ossoff to. So what about all the Islamophobic stuff? So are we going to say that we should be more Islamophobic to not piss off Republicans? Or right. how about everything that tied the shooting, which we didn't even talk about?
Yeah.
The crazy guy who shot up the Republican congressional baseball practice
team. Yes. And Virginia. Rep Scalise was
and he's
critically
now out
injured
of critical
and now he's
care,
okay.
Thankfully.
And, but yeah, no, I mean, crazy fucking shit came out from a lot of
but
outside
you have all,
money.
But you have all decided that now the Nancy
Instead of
Pelosi
saying,
ads.
Hey, this was a really fucking red district and we were always going to lose it. We put up a goddamn good fight and put a shitload of money into it and we got really close. That's a really good sign. We said, hey, let's look at the powerful lady and blame her. It must be Nancy Pelosi's fault that John Ossoff, not Bernie Sanders, who shit all over him in the beginning and didn't fundraise for him and didn't campaign for him and didn't do
and
shit.
And then came around and said, yeah,
but he's on
I
the
guess.
Unity tour. That's fine. Not his fault. Nancy Pelosi, who probably raised hundreds of thousands of dollars for his campaign because she's an incredibly effective fundraiser.
Yes.
Let's blame her. Let's blame the lady who's powerful.
Now, granted, out of a caucus of about 197, there's like a dozen of these Democrats who are talking about this bullshit, probably just to get their faces on camera because nobody knows who they are.
And nobody fucking cares, and I hope they get fucking primaried.
Catherine, what's her name, is the ringleader. I don't know, but who fucking cares? But here's the thing, though.
I'm not going to give her any.
Use a little critical thinking. If you want to turn on MSNBC or Fox News and see who the talking heads are who are jumping up and down about this Pelosi thing and how Democrats need to throw her overboard, it's Republican strategists.
Yeah.
So are they trying to do us a favor? You think they're just like...
Yeah. They're just like, you guys, you should listen to us. What you need to do is get rid of your most effective fundraiser in Congress... Because she's just too... Now, Newt Gingrich did come out and say, like, I hope Nancy Pelosi is the leader of this party forever because we know how to run against her. We know.
Newt,
we know exactly how to run against her.
Newt was being honest for a change.
Newt was being honest for a change. Everyone else was like, no, they're right. They should get some new blood in that party. Let's get some noobs out there. Let's get some young millennials who have never been in politics before to be the leader of the party. That's what you should do. I'm telling you. Just
like
a friend.
Like, we were making breakfast this morning, and this chick was just going on and like, and they have been so effective at running against Nancy Pelosi and you could point to the reason that that's why they lost the election in Georgia. And I'm like, who is this chick? And, yep, Republican strategist. Uh-huh. So why would Republican strategists want us to throw Nancy Pelosi overboard?
Well,
what is the one number one thing in this brand of politics that really fucking matters?
Money.
And what does Nancy Pelosi do best?
Raise money really,
for Democrats.
Really well. That's right.
Now, if you want to be a Sandinista that says, well, she raises money for the terrible Democrats who are
fuck
too
off. She
centrist.
Raises money for the Democrats that run.
Yes.
It doesn't matter. If you have a D next to your name, she will raise money for you effectively and funnel it to your campaign.
Mm-hmm.
That's why she's the fucking leader. It's not like they just went, oh, it's a beauty contest. Let's pick some lady so we look. No, Nancy Pelosi became the House Majority Leader because she has a lot of experience and seniority, which matters, but also because she's fucking extremely effective as a fundraiser. in the same way that the Republicans raise money against her, mm-hmm. right? They put Nancy Pelosi in the headline to your crazy uncle from Iowa, and he's going to give them $5.
Nancy Pelosi has been a very liberal, staunch liberal,
progressive
thorn in the side of the Republican
agenda. Correct. And she's good at leading
years.
Her caucus, and people listen to
getting
her.
Getting shit done. Just when like Harry Reid.
Exactly. When she was the House Majority Leader, like, that shit was on lockdown. When you have it under Republicans, it's a goddamn shit show. It's a nightmare mess of Paul Ryan just flailing around going, I guess I don't have the votes. Maybe I do. No, I don't. Never mind. Pull the bill. Put it back in. I don't know. Nancy Pelosi was like, fucking vote. And they're like, done. It's over. Like, she is effective as a leader. She's effective as a fundraiser. She's effective as a party leader. She's effective, which is why.
And I'm not saying she's perfect.
No.
There's plenty of times we criticize her and we question what she's saying. And sometimes she's too moderate.
But it's absolutely absurd. No, and the fucking pro-life shit the other couple weeks ago, like, I literally sent her a scathing fucking email about, like, don't you fucking dare sell me out ever.
Yeah.
No. Like, I will criticize her when she is criticizable, but this blaming Ossoff's loss on her
is one of the...
On its face, just patently absurd.
Like, one of the astronomically dumber things.
Yes.
To come out of the... party, it's a faction of the party in many, many years. It is it is painfully stupid.
Yes.
And
the reasons are I can't follow the logic at all. I don't understand what you're saying.
Objectively absurd. Well, it's certain people overreacting to the fact that there was a chance we could win the special election we weren't supposed to win, and we came up a little short. So now everybody needs to panic.
So now we should fire Nancy Pelosi.
Yeah. So now should we change the trajectory of gaining 10 and 15 and 20 points in districts?
Yeah, she did such a bad job that we gained 15 points in the reddest district in the country. Yeah, we should fire her for sure.
Yeah.
Because it's not like we have funding problems in the Democratic Party. We should fire the top fundraisers. It's fucking crazy. And I loved her reaction. She is, you know...
She brushed it off, yeah.
She came out and she said, look... I'll listen to the opinions of any of the members of my caucus. Ultimately, it's not their decision when I go.
Yeah.
And that's right.
Speaking of decisions when they go, there's fever pitch of rumors that Anthony Kennedy is about to step down.
Supreme Court Justice.
We don't know that. These rumors come up
a little earlier. He's 81. You know, understand. Please don't do this. Please don't do this.
Did any of you Stein voters out there stop and think even a second about the Supreme Court? I'm just asking.
Send us an email.
Explain to
talk
us.
Talk to me.
Explain to us how you did and you decided that's okay. We're better off with Trump anyway, despite what might happen on the Supreme Court.
Considering how old some of the members are and
do you understand the
lifetime depth, appointment?
The depth of just the voting rights stuff that's working its way through the courts right now? You
that's
may
right.
have voted for yourself to not be able to vote, literally.
Yes, that's correct. Or not yourself, because I don't think a lot of people of color voted for Jill Stein. You may have just voted for a bunch of people of color to be disenfranchised throughout this country.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you may have done.
And that's another part of the stupid we get
that?
To. There's still the fever pitch of we need to work out, reach out to the white working class voters. If it's at the expense of the base of our party, African-American voters and African-American women especially, that's fine for some reason as if...
And women and the entire
and
idea
That's another thing where you have all these Republican strategists saying, yeah, the Democrats need to reach out to white working class.
Yeah.
Like
they should do that. That's why they keep losing. Yeah, we should listen to Republican strategists. Are you serious?
Trying to help us.
That's like you're playing chess and you ask the person you're playing, what's my best next move? And then you do what they do. You fucking lose. Stop it. Stop. And also to the... podcast we did a couple weeks ago with Arliss and Molly, and we were talking about this idea of identity politics just on its face being racist and sexist.
Mm-hmm.
Saying that my identity and my experience in the world, and I'm white, but I'm a woman, but people of color's experience in the world is other.
Yeah.
That we can't focus on that because really what it's about is whiteness.
Yeah.
That anything that's not that is identity politics.
Yes.
It's like, well, that is my literal identity, and I go through the world in a different way. So I would like you to acknowledge that.
Sure.
Yeah. It's anyway. Ugh.
It's maddening.
Oh my God. And I know you deal with so much more of it than I do on Twitter, because, you know,
I try to engage with these people from time to time.
I try to stay off the thing. But anyway.
Well, that's about going to wrap it up for us.
Yeah.
So by this time next week, we may have a vote in the books.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll have a lot to say about that. And the world could be a different place. And I fear that it's going to be one of those things that they're going to vote for it. And then frantic Googling of what is AHCA and what's in it. And oh my God, what have we done?
Why didn't I call my senator? So if you live in a state with a Republican senator, please call them and urge them in as much passion as you possibly can to vote against it. And we'll report on it next week to you.
Okay. Stay active. Stay tuned. Stay involved. We got a new Patreon donation. Thank you very much for that.
And lovely people.
Find us at irreverentduo, irreverenttestimony@gmail.com. And we'll talk to you next week.